Welcome to this week's debriefing of the law. Today's guest is Dina Cataldo. Now, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did. Very good.
I am so bad at enunciating. I just did a webinar where I had to talk about what happened in ancient Greece, the Socrates trial, and I had to butcher all of these Greek names. And just, I'm thankful that probably no one would know if I was just doing it right or wrong. But nonetheless, I got your name correct. I'm happy with that one.
All right. Yes.
You are a lawyer who coaches lawyers on time management so they can build their legal practices without stress and without being overwhelmed. So, Dina, I went through your podcast, your Facebook page, your Instagram page, and I have to admit something here. And you probably already know this. You know this is coming, but I got to just lay it out there. I am embarrassed. I am totally embarrassed. You see, listeners, I excel in creativity, right? When it comes to details, that's not my specialty. And sometimes I forget to calendar certain things. So 2 days ago, true story, I get this email from the Cleveland Metropolitan Bar Association about an all-day webinar that we were doing today. Somehow I forgot to calendar such a minor matter as an all-day webinar for a city's bar association. I forgot to put that on my calendar. And so then I go through your website. It's all about time management, setting goals, reaching your best self. I am thinking, tell me if I'm wrong here, but calendaring items is probably somewhere on the list of things to do. Am I right on that?
You know what? It's all optional, right? I mean,
well, I feel very fortunate to be talking to you today. I think you are someone I definitely need to talk to. So let's start off with a street cred, because you came to this calling that you have naturally. What led you to this career of helping lawyers reach their full potential?
Well, I got to say, I have not always been a natural at managing my time, managing my stress and all of that. Like, you know, you make it sound great. I sound awesome right now. You know, like I've got it all together. My life, you know, everything's organized. But the reason I came to this was really out of necessity. And, you know, it was about 2.5 years into my career as a criminal prosecutor. You know, that time when you're trying to impress everybody and you're working like up to 70 hours a week because you want to show everybody like what a hard worker you are.
Right.
And, you know, I'm in trials and I'm doing back-to-back trials. And I found out I got diagnosed with breast cancer and I was 29 years old.
That is young.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't just me. Like, I think it even had a bigger impact for me because there were two other women who were my same age, came into my office at the same time. They both got diagnosed with cancers and they both didn't survive their cancers. So
wow.
It really like made a huge impact on my brain thinking, okay, I need to start thinking about things differently. And that was really the impetus for me to start looking at my life differently, but I didn't really start getting into managing my mind in a way that helped me manage my time better until a few years ago, after I decided that I wanted to create something more than just, you know, working as a prosecutor. Love being a prosecutor. I think it's a fabulous job. It's a calling for a lot of people, just like any kind of legal work is.
Now, are you still a prosecutor?
I am. I'm still a full-time prosecutor, and I also have a coaching practice.
Now, what drew you to being a prosecutor? Because I know we go through law school, and we all have, hey, you know, they ask you during your interviews of your second year, what do you want to be? Do you want to be a?
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea how to answer that question.
Yeah. I had no clue. What I hear some people, they're like, yes, I knew immediately when I went to law school that I wanted to do X. And I really wanted to be in the Foreign Service. I was interested in politics. I was interested in other cultures. And at the time I was considering law school, Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. And I was thinking, okay, well, how do I get into this area of politics? It seems like a lot of people are lawyers. And so I went from, you know, like I studied abroad in Egypt and I was really enveloped in, you know, everything international. And so my thought was, well, I will spend 5 years as, you know, an attorney And I gravitated towards prosecutorial law because of the stories. It's very human nature. Like we were talking just a couple of minutes before we started about, you know, you cannot, you know, make stories up like this. Like
right.
it's very much the drama of human nature. And I was drawn to that. But I thought I was going to be a Foreign Service officer. And during that course of me discovering, like, okay, I'm going to do something different after cancer, I discovered being able to connect with myself in a different way that I didn't really want to be a Foreign Service officer. I always told myself that's what I should do in right. order to serve. But I was putting so much pressure on myself, I didn't even realize that's not the life I wanted to live. I wanted to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it.
Right, right.
And being a Foreign Service officer, you get told where you're going to do what you're going to do and where you're going to be for years at a time. So
wow.
I had to go through like a real self-realization and connect with myself in a way that I never did prior to cancer to understand myself. And that's really what I help people with now is connecting with themselves so they can even see, like, do they really want what they're doing? You know, are they really going after those dreams or are they just playing it safe?
So what I want to know about your story is, and I know this cancer at 29 was obviously a huge turning point. Before you get to that point where you're a lawyer, you're working 70 hours a week, which I can't even imagine. I have never been in that position. I just can't work 70 hours a week. I'm sure I have, but mm-hmm. that's a lot. That's your entire life. You don't have time to do anything else but work. What were you thinking about your career goals? Were you thinking, oh, at some point in time in my future, I'll get things straightened out and have some work-life balance? What was going through your mind?
So I think that what I was going through, a lot of lawyers who are type A people pleasers go through, which is they are looking outside of ourselves. We're looking outside of ourselves for that approval.
Right.
And for me, I always received approval in terms of praise for working hard.
Okay.
And so for me, working hard was the way to get that outside approval. And I didn't take the time to really like look at how it was impacting my life.
Now, did you notice that a lot of lawyers have that problem? Is that a problem that is, I'm not going to say unique to the lawyers, but definitely when you said that, I immediately resonated with it because I tend to feel way too strongly on behalf of my clients. I mean, their problems are now my problems. And so if they lose a case, I just lost a case. And it was almost too much to bear. The stress of going to court, knowing that their future hangs in the balance, it's all consuming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the lawyers that I talk with have that happening for them, right? Like they are deeply committed to helping, to serving their clients. And at the same time, they do it at the expense of themselves. So while they are amazing advocates for the people that they're serving, they're horrible advocates for themselves. They don't make time for themselves. They're always telling themselves, I don't have time. I'll do that later. Sometimes they don't charge their clients
for
the work that they're doing. And you're like, whoa, wait a minute.
That's
like,
hard. Right?
Yeah.
I can't answer that question. How much do you charge? I don't want to charge anybody anything. I mean, it really is hard.
I can understand that, but at the same time, they're not like your clients aren't going to value your service
True.
To them if you don't charge them. And you're only going to attract the clients that you want to attract. Like you can still serve people who have lower incomes and also serve those who have higher incomes
right.
and have a good income for yourself. Like doesn't preclude you from doing pro bono work for, you know, taking cases that you really believe in. And at the same time, ensuring that you are sustained financially and emotionally in your practice.
Now, I got to admit, I feel like I've had it very easy throughout my entire career or maybe I'm missing out. But I have never really worked in a for-profit firm. I mean, I did for a couple of years out of law school. I worked for the large law firms because that's what you're supposed to do to pay back your debt. But I then quickly went to nonprofit law. And so we never charged our clients a dime for anything. I could spend, you know, 3 months on a single case that if you were in the real world, no one would pay for it because no one would pay for that kind of legal work. But since we were working for a nonprofit, we can put as many hours as we wanted to in any particular issue. But what is it like coaching lawyers? I mean, do you find us as a category easy to work with, hard to work with? My wife.
I love it. Oh my gosh. We are so interesting. Lawyers have wily brains.
Okay.
The people that I work with, I love them so much. Like I just, my whole heart goes into coaching them because I so deeply feel like I have been where they are.
Right.
They disconnected with the emotions in our body. So that's a big one. It's like calibrating a compass to tell us where we want to go and help us get to where we want to go. We don't take the time, most of us, to really dig into even how we feel. Maybe we feel overwhelmed and stress and anxiety and all of that. But to get to the point where we're feeling gratitude and we're feeling accomplishment, that is foreign to so many of the lawyers I work with. And I was joking with one of my clients the other day. I was saying something like, she's like, so like, what's going to happen here? And I said, well, you know, I'm going to call you on your BS until you call yourself on your BS.
Wow.
Like, that's just how it works. Like, I am going to keep retraining your brain until you can see what you're creating and then you can create it for yourself.
Wow. And do you think that many lawyers have this moment in their career when they just have this awakening? And for me, it's a eureka moment. I know where I was. There's actually two different moments. One, I was in the basement of our law building, which is downtown Kansas City. You know, you're in the basement, and there was banker boxes that I think spanned the entire square footage of this basement. And senior partner said, go find the smoking gun. Like, I have no idea what a smoking gun is. I'm going through documents. Nothing is processing. And then I thought, am I wasting my life? Is this what my future holds for me? I have no idea what I am doing. And the other moment I had was I was actually in front of a computer screen working. And I just went numb. It's like, this is not what I want to be doing. I am miserable here working for this firm. Do many lawyers have that kind of eureka moments, or what do you think?
Yeah, you know, it seems to be accumulation of things where they just realize something isn't right, that there's something that they want. Like, they can't describe what they want sometimes. They just know that what they're doing right now isn't working.
Right. Yeah.
what they're thinking and what they're feeling doesn't feel good. And when they get exposed, like, I think we all get exposed to someone or a concept at just the right time where it just kind of like penetrates. It's like, boom, drops some knowledge in your brain and it just like it absorbs. And other times we could hear the same thing and it just deflects. But if they like jump into somebody's world, like in my podcast, or maybe they see me on Instagram and they just kind of like see, oh, I get it now. I understand.
Yeah.
I'm normal. Like, but there's other things I can do to feel better.
Well, speaking of your podcast and your Instagram and Facebook sites, and by the way, on our show notes to this podcast, we're gonna have links to all of your sites, so you don't have to worry about people writing it down while they're driving. But nonetheless, I got to know, Dina, how do you come up with your titles? I mean, you have mastered the art of capturing a person's attention. I mean, let me just read some of these titles, and then I want to dig into some of them as you find interest. But here are some of the titles. Overcoming Imposter Syndrome. I mean, when I read that, I just immediately resonated, and I have no idea if you were talking about what I feel, but I know there was a moment in my career when I thought, okay, when are they actually going to realize that I am full of crap, and I have no idea what I am doing, because I am definitely an imposter. How do you come up with these titles?
You know, I put a lot of thought and care into the topics that I talk about. I know that love listening to podcasts. Like that, that's why I created my own, is because I love having someone else's
right.
thoughts in my head, especially if they have thoughts that I want to have.
You
know?
Yeah.
I mean, if I hear somebody that thinks in a way that is clear and just feels really good, I want to absorb how they think about concepts. And that's true when it comes to topics about money, about business, about anything like that. And I had gone through my period of learning how to do business, right? Like I think everybody kind of goes through that stage, and then you have to realize, okay, I'm done with the learning. I need to start creating.
Right.
And so I got a really good foundation, and you know, I learned all of these things online because obviously my background's law.
Yeah.
And I learned like, okay, this is what I'm interested in. How does it correlate with what I think my ideal clients are interested in? What are the problems that they're having? And then I just make something up.
How about this one? Staying on schedule when life throws you a curveball. I mean, great, great title. It's an amazing one. Now this one here, are you unconsciously deciding to fail? What is that about? That is an amazing title.
I don't even remember that title. I don't
you. Oh, I tell you, you don't even know your own genius. But it just resonated with me because I think that there are things that we do where we've determined for ourselves we're going to mess up. We're going to screw this up. Yeah. And whatever our habits are, they're leading us down this path. And some of us want to fail because we feel more comfortable in that realm rather than reaching the success that is maybe our destiny. How about this one? And this one, I do want you to spend some time on. I want this for me, so I want you to give it to me. All right, you ready?
Okay, all right.
I want to get 5 hours back weekly. You made the guarantee on your website that there is a way you can give me 5 hours back immediately. So the first thing that I want to know before you get into this is, can I pick which 5 hours back I get back? Because I would like it on Saturday afternoon while my Nebraska Cornhuskers are playing college football. I would like those 5 hours, to be lengthened. But how do we get 5 extra hours?
Yeah. So let's talk about you. All right. So you can design, and this is something that took me trying and practicing and figuring it out to get my day designed the way I wanted it to be, because there's two things that we all need in order to create what we want. First of all, we need to create space in our life in order to think. And that's not going to happen while we're multitasking, listening to, the news and doing all of the things in the morning, getting ready for work. We're not going to create that quiet space if we're not making like a real effort to do that.
Okay.
And the second thing that we need to be able to do is get connected with how we feel. Okay. Do we feel anxious? Do we feel worried? Or do we feel open? Do we feel like calm? Okay, so those are just like a couple examples. Like one set of feelings is going to make you close down and you feel pressured and it's going to feel like crap. And then the other set of emotions is going to make you feel lighter and you're going to be more open to possibility.
Okay.
So those are two things that you really need to change, to recalibrate your compass in order to create what you want. And when I talk about, like, I have that opt-in for, it's a busy lawyer's guide to get 5 hours back.
Right.
It's giving you both the tangible ways to create more time. So I'm, like planning things, right? Like that's pretty obvious. Like we plan things and we have them scheduled and we either do them or we don't do them. There's one example of a tangible, right?
Right. Now, wait a second. We plan things. Some of us, and I won't mention names, but myself, we plan to plan. We just love planning. It's all about the plan. I cannot tell you, Dina, how many plans I've come up with to make $1 million by whatever date. I mean, I am really good at planning, but and obviously you have dietary goals, you have life goals. I love the plan. So, but sometimes it's not as easy as planning because despite my best efforts, the plans don't come to fruition.
Oh, yeah. We're planning addicts. We're all about, let's think about how we can improve our life, right? Like we've got like every New Year's, we're like, oh, yeah, this is the year I am going to, you know, lose the weight. This is the year I'm going to get my business totally organized. You know,
oh, yeah.
That's every single year. And the reason we don't do that, the reason we don't follow through on plans, it's because our brain isn't designed to follow through on plans. There's two big parts of our brain.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So there's two big parts of our brain. And one of them is that primal part of our brain, our unconscious part of our brain. We can call it the subconscious. And that is wired with old school programming. So back in the day, we used to be, you know, fearful. You know, we'd get that adrenaline rush when we saw a saber-toothed tiger. Now we get fearful when we see a bunch of email alerts pop up. Our primal brain is reacting to the world around us, but it hasn't caught up to what our surroundings are. And we have an evolved part of our brain now, though, our prefrontal cortex, which we can train to begin seeing what our subconscious brain is doing and saying, oh, I see what you're doing there. No. I really do want to work out today. Here's why. You know, I really do want to do this thing. Here's why. So our subconscious part of our brain, our primal part of the brain, is driven by fear, right? It wants to keep us safe. Okay. Right. So this is a motivational triad. These are three things I'm going to show you. So one of them is like keeping us safe. Okay. Keep us safe from the saber-toothed tiger. Keep us safe from the emails.
Right.
Another thing that we're really driven by is pleasure. I mean, that's why we want sex. That's why we want companionship. Like all of those things, we're driven by pleasure. Same thing with like when we drink wine, anything like that. It's really, we're drawn to it because it's giving us pleasure.
Okay.
And the other thing is ease. It's got to be easy for our subconscious brain or it doesn't want to do it. And of course, building a business, following through on plans, not super easy. So that's why we've got to like train our brain, our prefrontal cortex, to start observing our mind. That's why the quiet time is so important. That's why keying into our emotions is so important so that we can understand, okay, what am I seeing going on in my brain? What do I see going on in my body right now? And when we get more connected, then we can start taking action the way we want to.
So I want to make sure I'm following this. So you're saying that when I come up with a plan and sometimes I don't follow through on my plan, that there is, I got to understand how the subconscious works. And you're saying there's three things that are kind of all going on. Safety, pleasure is the second one. And then the third one is E. So my subconscious is always kind of looking for those things. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So then why do I not do my plan?
Because you don't want to. It's not easy.
Okay.
but you know what? This is what my clients discover is that they have to make a concerted effort to do this. Okay. It's that 1 hour a week I spend with people is helping them recalibrate their brain so that they can stay on track. So for instance, I'll give you an example for me because I went through this like hard and it was painful and I didn't understand what was going on. So when I was talking to you about the foreign service example and what I really wanted for myself, or at least I thought I did. And so I did all the things, right? Like I bought all the books, I printed out all the practice exams, I had them all out on my table, I set aside time to do the thing, and then I did nothing. Like, and I would procrastinate and I would feel guilty and it would just eat at me because I wasn't following through on my plan. And I thought that meant there was something wrong with me. Like, I really thought that, like, what is going on? Like, there's something wrong with me. But it turned out like I had to, if that is what I wanted, like if I decided that that was what I wanted, then I was going to have to make a choice. Okay. I would be making a choice between watching television or eating crap, you know, because a lot, I know for me, that's my go-to is like, if I feel stressed or overwhelmed, I'll notice myself gravitate to the kitchen and I'll be like, oh, why am I doing that? That's interesting. And then I can say, oh, I see. I start getting aware of my habits and what my brain is doing. so I can say, okay, this is uncomfortable and I'm going to do it anyway. So if I had decided that I wanted to do the Foreign Service, what I would have done if I had these tools like a decade ago, which would have been awesome, I could say, okay, let's take a look at this. Like, if this is something that I really want, let's say, you know, working out, whatever it is, and I find myself gravitating towards the kitchen or the television instead of doing this thing, the only reason that's happening is because my brain wants it really easy. And I know if I really want to, you know, get the body of my dreams, I know if I really want to join the Foreign Service, that I'm going to have to give something up. And if I'm willing to do that, then I've got to pay attention to when my habit is to go to the kitchen or to watch television. And I have to be kind to myself. This is one thing I noticed a lot with myself is I would beat myself up when I wouldn't do those things.
Yeah,
I would be so mean to myself.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the opposite of what we need to do. We actually need to, it's going to sound so funny, if, you know, for people listening who aren't into this stuff, it's going to be like, hey, you just have to say to yourself, hey, I get it. I totally understand. Like this is something you really want though. So just, you know, do a little bit.
Too often that voice says, see, I told you so. You both knew you would be here when you set the plan. You're not going to make it. So I guess, is that what you're saying? Stop beating yourself up. Be easy on yourself.
Yeah. And when, you know, when you say easy on yourself, it's like, okay, you know, we wouldn't say half the crap we say to ourselves to anyone else in the world. So
right,
like,
that's anytime, true. Right.
You know what I mean? So if you find yourself saying, I'm a total failure, like I totally suck, I can't believe I'm doing this again. I want you, you know, anyone listening to this to say, okay, if I were talking to a little girl, like my little girl, or, you know, I don't have any children, but like, if you know, people who have children can really say, I would never say that to my child. I would never say that to my child. I would never say that to my best friend, my partner, ever. So until we start treating ourselves with respect and we begin to train ourselves to trust ourselves, we won't be able to follow through. And a big reason I wasn't able to follow through a decade ago is because I didn't have the tools to learn how to trust myself. I didn't know how to talk to myself because all I knew was how to be negative towards myself.
Interesting. Now, on your the plan for the week. So this is all about getting those 5 hours back. You mentioned that you've got to understand how your subconscious works. So I guess the thought there is that you know how to deal with it and recognize when it's fighting against you, when you're trying to achieve something. What's our next step?
Well, the first step is awareness, right? So that just understanding those concepts is just awareness.
Right.
So that you know you're not doing anything wrong. It's just, that's just the way our brains are wired. When I look at these processes, I like a really open calendar. Like you start out like just taking 20 minutes to yourself and writing out everything you think you have to do in the upcoming week. So I take like an hour every, now I've been doing it Sunday night. I just take an hour. I write down everything I think I've got to do this upcoming week. It gets everything out of your brain, right? Totally cleans it out.
Yes. And that is so important to me. I used to not be a to-do person and I'm probably not a to-do person now, but I like to, at the very beginning of the week, write down everything I'm going to accomplish. Now, I will tell you, my problem is I think I'm a Superman, I guess. Because if you look at my to-do list, it's like 4 months worth of items. I know I'm not going to get all that stuff done in 1 week, but I still put it on my to-do list.
Well, okay, I'm not a fan of to-do lists. I used to have a lot of to-do lists and lots of post-it notes, and I just think that that is a waste of our brain power. So when I talk about this 20 minutes just to write everything down, this is not your to-do list for the week. This is just emptying your brain of things like, I got to go to Lowe's and purchase a table. And everything between hearings and, you know, grocery shopping and whatever else you need to do, taking your kids wherever they need to go, you write it all down. Okay, and that's just to get it out of your brain. You're not going to be able to do everything that's on this list. You're going to be crossing things out. So we want to do things like clean the garage, and we have all these lofty ideas like, yeah, I'm going to have the car washed, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do that. No, we're just having this as like your baseline just to get everything out of your head. because the next step is going to, and make sure that you're writing all the stuff you want to do for yourself, right? Like you're journaling. I have a journaling practice I'm religious about. So journaling practice, meditation, working out, whatever you've got that you use to take care of yourself, you write that down too. And then you go through and you start looking for the things that don't have to happen this week, right? Like okay. You'd be like, I don't really need to go to the garage, clean out right. The garage this week. Done. I'm not doing that. I don't feel like doing that.
Easy.
Right? Go through and just cross it out. And like, no guilt. Just say, no, I'm not doing that this week. It's not happening. I'm not doing it. And then you can go through that list and you start allocating time for each thing. And it's going to be guesswork at first if you've never done this before or you don't really have like a good idea of how long it takes to write a contract or whatever it is if you're new to your practice. It's going to be some trial and error in it, but you can allocate time to it. So that's just like the very first step here, okay? Like just like this is like the foundation for what we're going to do next, right. Okay? All right. So once you've done all of that, the next thing is to go into your calendar. Only have one calendar. I don't know, like, I don't like to fight people on this. I just tell them you pick one calendar. I don't care which one it is, but right. You just pick one and you use that.
I learned that the hard way this week. Yes. One calendar, not multiple.
Like I know there's some people who like hard calendars, some people who like electronic, both. I'm like, no, you pick one and that's the one you go with. It's too much brain energy. We have a limited amount of brain energy. Our brain already doesn't want to do the hard things. So just do one, make it easy for yourself.
Oh, I so agree with that. I do not understand why some people have multiple calendars. My brain does not work that way.
So the very first thing when you are putting any of these items onto your calendar for the upcoming week is to put you time first. And this is going to feel really weird for people who are not used to doing that.
Like, what do you mean by that?
So any of your workouts, they go on your calendar first.
Okay.
Any of the time you want to spend with yourself for quiet time, I trained myself to become a morning person. I hated mornings for years.
Right.
And I am now like super early morning person because that's my time. That's the time I get in with total quiet in my house.
It is quiet. And the phone's not ringing.
Anywho. So when I plan, I make sure I'm planning time for my mornings. I'm planning time to have like my workouts. And sometimes it gets done and sometimes it doesn't, right? But I don't beat myself up if it doesn't happen. That's okay. The big difference.
Right.
Because that'll paralyze you if you aren't getting something done and you start beating yourself up over it. You're never going to do it. So that's the first thing you put on the calendar. The second thing you put on your calendar are time with your partner, your kids, family, friends.
Okay.
And then you put everything else.
That I assume that would be like your work goals, what you want to accomplish at work, going to trial or getting some podcasting done, mm-hmm. whatever. So your list is time for yourself. And then secondly, time for others. And then thirdly, I got to go pay the bills. So I'm going to go to work there at the end. So do you see people really be getting frustrated when they put, because obviously that third one is going to rise really quickly. I mean, I don't know who said it, but there's this thought that if you don't know where your next meal is coming from, then all of a sudden that becomes really important in your life, right? Your entire mindset is, I got to go hunt. I got to go gather because I need something mm-hmm. to eat for me and my family here next dinner. But now that we live in a world where that's not really a pressing concern, we know where our next meal is coming from for most of us. So it's a little different. Am I off base on that? Or is that?
You know, I would actually argue for the fact that most people that I talk to, and I'll keep it with just lawyers that I work with, are in scarcity mindset. That is the natural programming for our brain.
Okay.
We are always looking, like you were saying, hunting and gathering. We're always looking to make sure that we are secure, that we are safe, but we're always looking outside of us for that security. And we think that working harder is going to make us feel secure. We think that making more money is going to make us feel secure.
Okay.
But the truth is that we have to feel that deep in our bones and understand that we are safe. And the way that we do that is looking around, because like, let's face it, we're lawyers. We're not starving. We're not on the streets. If you're listening to this podcast, you're incredibly fortunate.
Yeah.
It's like, we have everything. Like, there are people who have so much less than us and feel secure. And there are people who have so much more than us and feel insecure in how much that they have.
You know, so go on.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So you're saying that when you put that third element of work higher, because you think, oh, I need to do it because it's I don't feel secure. I need the safety net. That's really a cop out. And in fact, you can almost use that too often to justify squeezing out number one and number two on the list. I mean, you can almost use that your entire life. And then where are you at the end of your life?
Well, I mean, and that's how most of us live, right? We're like, well, I'm just going to work really hard until I'm 65. Right. And then I'll enjoy my life. Like, no, how about we enjoy our life now?
Oh, I know. Yeah. I don't know how long my brothers and I have said, hey, we're going to take that golf retreat. Well, when are we going to take the time off to take that golf retreat? Because, your life can get busy, and then it's always busy. So that's just a kind of a compound. Isn't there some kind of saying about pouring rocks into a jar that fits there, right?
Oh, the one with you put the sand over the rocks and you fill in every little crevice with the sand?
Yeah. So if you put the sand in first, you're not going to put the big stuff in your life, the big rocks. There's no room for it. But if you mm-hmm. put it in the right order, there's room for everything, in your life.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I'm a big advocate of keeping space in there, too. So that's like when I think of like the sand filling in all the gaps, I'm like, no, don't put too much sand in there. Like,
right.
Leave some space.
Yeah. You got to make room for the margins, right? If you constantly live life to the tilt and don't put margins into your schedule, you're going to crash and burn. All right. So I went through your website and I got to, hey, you got to start with awareness, right? You got to track down your time. You got to do the Sunday weekly download where you say, this is what I'm going to do this week. You got to prioritize your list. I found it interesting because here's the problem. Number five, what will get in your way and solve for it? So are you doing that proactively? You're looking at your calendar and you're just saying, look, I know myself. I know something's going to get in the way. I'm not going to actually do point number four. I haven't done point number four in three weeks or whatever. So we need to make a decision now. Is point number four not really that important to me? Going to the gym and working out, whatever. I say that, but I really don't care about it. Or if it is important to me, I got to solve. Why am I not doing that on a weekly basis? What thoughts do you have on solving for things that get into your way?
Okay. So I like the workout. We've been talking about the workout. And right now, this is totally real for me right now. So,
all right.
So I look at like my workouts, I'll schedule them. And sometimes like it's been really cold, right? So my body's like, no, we don't need to go out into the gym in the garage. It's too cold out there, right? Like my brain's whiny about it. It's now, like,
can I just pause for a second? can I just pause for a second?
Sure.
What is too cold for you? What is the actual temperature you're talking about?
I'm just curious. I'm from California. I'm from Southern California. So like it could be 68 degrees and I'm freezing. So
oh my goodness, you're a whiner. All right.
I'm a wuss.
All right. I'm just curious about that. Yeah.
I know Kansas City is a little different. So so I have to really think through, okay, how am I going to make this easier for me? And you can use this for any area of your life. Let's say there's a project going on in your office. There is something that you've been meaning to prioritize in your life. It doesn't have to be working out, but how do you make it easier for yourself? And one of the things that we can do, easy example with the working out is, okay, the night before I set my clothes out. Okay. Maybe I'm in the morning when I wake up, I'm sitting and I'm having my coffee and I'm thinking, oh, but I'm so warm here. I don't want to go out to the gym.
Right.
And so my next thought is, well, okay, how about I just put on my workout clothes? Like, that's it. Like, I'm just taking a baby step. It's not a big commitment. It's just like, I'm putting on the clothes. And then the next step is like, oh, but it's so cold outside and I don't want to go there. It's like, well, how about we just like maybe do a little warm up in the house or do some stretching outside, like something really little.
Right.
And then chances are we'll get into the groove and we'll do something. So it's not, you know, it's not like high pressure, like you've got to do this. Let's go do this. You know,
yes.
For me, it's very much like, okay, I'm just going to take little baby steps. My brain's less resistant when I just do little tiny commitments.
Oh, I think that is a powerful concept and it definitely resonates with me. Whether you talk about any kind of project, like I'm writing a brief, to working out. If I just do a little bit, I get in the game, then I'm in the game, right? Then it's like, hey, let's just go full tilt here. Let's just write this brief and annihilate the other side. Let's go find some authority I can find. I mean, you're in it to win it at that moment in time. But getting started, that's the hardest part. But once you get in, if you could trick yourself to, hey, just start, just do this little bit, right? Or in exercising. Hey, if I just go out there and I'm just going to run a half a mile, I'm just going to kind of go up and back here and I'm just going to get a little bit of exercise in. The reality is once you get going, you don't want to stop. I mean, hey, I'm already out there. Let's go ahead and let's run, you know, a 5K, a 10K and get it over with, because it's the getting started that seems so inundating.
Yeah.
All right. So there is the next section. I got to take you to, I'm not going to take you to task, but I really am going to take you to task on these. Because I want to know, I'm fighting back on these. All right. So let's go over your what not to do list. So I have here, the first thing on what not to do is don't multitask. Now, I guess I kind of see that. What is your thought behind don't multitask?
So I have two things that I'll say about this. One is there's no such thing as multitasking, really.
Okay.
It's more accurate to talk about it as context switching. So when we are focused on one task, and let's say the phone rings and we decide to pick it up, we are using energy to shift our focus, to pick up the phone, answer the question, move into this whole mode where maybe we have to pull a file and talk to a client. And then once we're done with that, we've got to move back to the project. We have to remember, where were we? You know, what are we? We're writing a brief, maybe. We have to go back into the research. Where were we doing? You know, all of that.
Right.
And it takes more energy and it reduces the momentum that we have towards a project. So there's one way of viewing it. And then the other way of viewing it is this, because I have a job where it, and especially with Zoom, right? Because COVID, we're in court on Zoom, we're expected to answer emails, maybe we've got Microsoft Teams up, we're like helping our partner, I have a partner that I work with, and so I'm helping her talk to defense attorneys about like cases while she's on the record, you know?
Right,
so
right.
Just like, there's a lot of things that are going on, but I reduce my inability to focus by doing a couple things. And one of them is when I'm in court, I am focused on being in court. Okay.
Right.
We'll have maybe a quick break and then I'll have the opportunity to see if an email popped up. I don't have notifications. Those things drive me nuts and they are just the worst.
I agree so much. I hate them.
Like, yeah. I mean, so I am in court. I'm 100% there. And then if we are in a moment's break, I'll take a moment, see if there's any important emails that came up.
Yes.
If there's nothing important, I just minimize it. And then I'm back in court.
Okay.
So it's like, we have to really manage our mind around those things that are now becoming so natural that we're just mindlessly doing things and losing the energy and momentum that we have.
I like that. I do like the idea of being fully engaged in the moment because you're dialed in. I almost think of it like you're in the zone. I just interviewed Shannon Barkey. She's an Olympic skier, and she was talking to me about how she operates in the zone. And I kind of think you're speaking to the same issue here, which is you're dialed in. There is no such thing, really, as multitasking. I mean, you're doing one thing. And so if you're doing two things, then you're really stopping one, gearing up for the second, and you're wasting time. And so, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Be in the moment. Here's the other thought that I've had recently, because I'm definitely getting older. I'm getting to that older generation. And Yeah, when you multitask, just time flies, and then you realize what have I done? I haven't even enjoyed life. I've been so busy doing tasks that I kind of failed to enjoy the journey, and so I have that aspect as well. Now, the part of multitasking that I do is exercising. I do like to exercise and listen to podcasts at the same time. So as far as your podcasts are concerned, still exercise. And is that fair to say, listen to podcasts while you're exercising? Or would you say that's not okay?
Whatever you want to do is okay. I have no judgment on that.
But okay.
I will, Tony Robbins talks about net extra time. So I sometimes, and that means like, let's say you're driving to work and right. you also have a podcast on, or you're working out and you're listening to a podcast. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. If I don't feel like I've had enough quiet time to myself, then I don't listen. Like if I need that quiet time and I feel a little anxious, I will not listen to anything, because anything I'm listening to is taking my attention away from that moment. And I need to like just kind of center myself. It's just like, okay, look, I want to be focused. I would love to hear this podcast, but at the same time, I haven't taken that time for myself to really get quiet.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not a good or a bad. It's just what you feel like.
I tell you what, you are getting, I won't say that. I was going to say, I noticed I had that same desire the older I got. The older I got, I wanted more quiet time.
I'm not old. I just want you to know that. I am just fine.
I caught myself before I said that. But nonetheless, it's just a personal observation of myself that, you know, I've even caught myself. And this one, I'm embarrassed to admit. I've caught myself driving in the car, turning off the radio. I go, what? I never would have done this back in the old days, right? I got to have stuff going on. I got to have music. I got to talking. Even in the background, I have found myself saying I would prefer quiet. I don't even know what to say.
That's funny. It just depends on my mood. Like sometimes I love Depeche Mode. That's like my favorite. So I will blast them. And then other times I want it quiet. Like it's just depends on my mood.
You know what? Once we start applying for the Homeowners Association board, we know we've kind of gone over the deep end.
Yeah, but that's not happening. No,
we're not doing that. All right. Now, this one, number two, I really kind of like. I'm going to do a little bit of takeoff on your point number two. Your point number two says, don't answer the phone or respond to emails in the middle of a project, which I definitely can see the point there. That is good. Here's my problem, though, with emails. Not necessarily that. Though I do that. I do that when I'm looking to be distracted. I'm on a project. I want to be distracted because I'm just I'm a wit's end. And so I'm going to answer an email. Here's what I do, though. I go over an email and I say to myself, okay, that's an email. I'll handle it later. I got to tell you, that's a time suck right there. Why would I put an email to the side to handle it later? Now I got to refine that email, rethink about it, and then resolve it at a later point in time.
So why are you looking at your email?
Well, I'm saying, let's just say I'm looking at my email at some point in time. You know, I'm going through my emails. In my mind, I say, I don't want to handle that now. I'm going to put that to the side and handle that later. And I don't know why I do that. That is a huge time suck, because I can handle it right now. It's totally within my realm to do, but I just put it to the side. And what happens is, in the back of my mind later on, I'll say, I remember I was supposed to get an email about that matter. What happened to it? I got to go digging through my files, find that email, and then respond to it. So I found this rule, and I don't know if this even applies to this or if I'm way out of left field, but I heard this rule that says it's the one-touch rule. So with email, you only do the one touch. And so once you touch it, answer it, be done with it, unless you can't. But if you can respond to that email in that moment, do it and get it off your plate. If you come back later to answer it, it just multiplies your time spent on that matter. Does that make sense, or is that way in left field?
So I'm going to give you the lawyer answer, and that is, it depends.
Okay,
so when we're going into our inbox, there might be a couple different reasons we're going in. So one of them for me personally is I'm going in to see whether or not there is an immediate matter that is currently in court that I need to address.
Okay, because that makes sense.
When we're in court, people are emailing, hey, are you in this department? Hey, can we resolve it for this? You know, can we work something out? And you're going back and forth, back and forth. And I will go in and I will choose only to respond to those emails while I am in court, because my brain doesn't have the capacity to just start looking at all the other emails.
Okay.
Now, when I am making intentional time to say, I am going to go into my emails and I am going to respond, then I can totally see the one touch rule working. Like, you look at it, you say, hey, like, for instance, I'll get an email about a case, I'll forward it to my assistant, I'll say, hey, can you grab that file? And then she'll put that email on top, and then I can review it and I know exactly what I'm looking at. But if you're going in, which is what's really common for us to do, is to go into email, to go into social media without a plan, just to distract us from something that we are trying to do, to focus on, like writing a brief or a contract or whatever it is we're doing, then we're not being productive. We're hurting, we're interfering with our productivity. But if you set time aside each week, like at the beginning of your week, when you're doing this plan to check your emails, say morning, noon, and afternoon, right, then you'll have like a single period of time where you can use that and just say, I'm going to respond to emails during this 30 minutes, hour, whatever it is.
I like that. Now, before I get to point number three, I do have to know, have you been talking to my wife?
Why? What did she say?
Point number three is this. Don't fly by the seat of your pants. That's all I do. That is my driving ambition in life. I can make it up as we go.
It sounds like fun, doesn't it?
Oh, I got to tell you, my philosophy is quite a bit different. My philosophy is I have this falling forward approach to life. I have no idea what I'm doing, right?
I got no clue.
I started my business 5 years ago, and Dina, I got to tell you, I'm astonished that today the lights are still on, and I have a roof over my head. How have I made it 5 years? And here's what I do. I do something, it doesn't work, I don't do that again. I do something and it works, that I do again. And so it's my falling forward approach. It's a football metaphor. I don't know if you're big into football.
No,
but,
I get it, yeah.
You know, if you're a running back and you're falling, they teach you to twist and turn so that you fall forward. So even though you're being tackled, you've advanced the cause. You've moved the ball down the field.
Theme of inches, yes.
Yes, exactly. So what do you mean by don't fly by the seat of your pants?
Yeah. So those are two different concepts that you just talked about. So the fly by the seat of your pants really refers to the attorneys I talk to who don't schedule things. Like, okay, they really just like, they'll have their main things on their calendar, meaning a meeting, or they'll have a due date for a brief, but they are not thinking big picture about how they want to live their life,
right,
where they want to put in time for themselves, their family, anything like that. They're just looking at everything as work, okay? And it's just, they'll fill in the blanks as they,
right,
go along. Now, if you do that, everything's going to take forever, you know?
Right,
it's
right.
Like, I like to give the example of, like, you're in trial, judge, you know, tells you at noon, okay, at 1:30 when you're back in court, I want you to have briefed this issue. I want to know what's going on with this particular case. Talk about it, you know?
Right.
And you get an hour to do it and eat, and you finish researching it in an hour in an impeccable way. And yet if we give ourselves all day to research the issue, it's going to take all day. So if we give ourselves an unlimited amount of time, I think it's called the Parkinson's rule, we are going to use up all of that time. But if we start constraining ourselves to say, okay, I'm only going to check emails for an hour at 9 a.m. on this day, this time, whatever it is, I'm only going to return calls on Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, and I'll give them an alternative way to contact me that I prefer, and like email, for instance, then I have more control over how I want to use my time, and I use less of it towards the things that don't matter and more of it towards the things that do matter. Now, what you're talking about, the concept of how you are, you know, you try things and you do them and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't work, that's a valid thing that we need to be training lawyers to do who have their business, because so many lawyers are afraid of failure that they don't do things and try things.
Right.
And if it doesn't work, and reevaluate and say, okay, well, how can I make this easy for myself? How can I make this work? And you can take that concept to your calendar. Like, if your calendar isn't working, like, I've had clients who, you know, they want to make their own solo practice, and they have a full-time job as a lawyer, and they're finding themselves scheduling time Thursday night and Friday night,
right,
to build their business, and they don't do it, and they start beating themselves up. And I said, why are you putting all of this work on Thursday and Friday night when you know you want to just hang out and watch TV with your husband? Like, yeah. Why are you doing that to yourself?
Right.
Then it's time to reevaluate and try something different.
I like that. I like that. Well, I got to tell you what, I have a couple more questions to ask you, but I do want to be cognizant of your time. You're a wealth of information. I got to tell you, I feel like I could talk to you forever. So go ahead and give me and give our listeners, all right, what is your number one time management recommendation? You know, if listeners could start one thing immediately today, what would that be?
Put yourself first. Make some quiet time. Find it. Do it.
I like that. You know, my grandfather told me that one time. There was this old scripture verse that says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, right? And so he said, look, a predicate to that is first, you got to love yourself. You can't treat others like you would want to be treated until you actually treat yourself right. And so that actually has got to be done first, and then you can do the second later. All right. I liked it. Now, this one is slightly different, but do you have a favorite lawyer show or a lawyer movie?
Oh, I can't stand watching lawyer shows or movies. I yell at them. I just like that would never happen.
Exactly.
You can't object to that.
That would never happen.
I really get aggravated.
Oh, I know. Yes. That's actually kind of why I like enjoy watching some of them with non-lawyers. They don't like it with me, but I got to point out to them all the, you know, inaccuracies in what that scene just had. Oh, my worst one. And this isn't even really a lawyer show. Have you seen Bull?
No.
Okay, don't see it. It's about a jury consultant show, right? And so when you start watching the hour show, before it goes to commercial, some murder happens, right? So when you come back from commercial, which in the show is like the next day, they're sitting in jury trial starting the next day. It's like, that's not real life stuff.
Right.
It's not the very next day when trial starts. So, yeah, they're very out there.
Yeah. Right. You know, they make it think like the criminal justice system is like, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Does not happen that way. All right. Well, you have been a wealth of information. Tell our listeners what is the best way for people to follow you or to reach you? Again, we'll put these in our show notes so you don't have to write these down if you're driving. But what is the best way for our listeners to follow you?
So there are three places. One, my podcast. It's called Be a Better Lawyer Podcast. I publish every Thursday. And Instagram, Dina.Cataldo. Those are like the two main places I like to hang out and talk to people.
Okay.
The other is my email list. I send out emails and I try to give like value in every single email to really like pull people into this world of recognizing their worth and, spending their time the way they want to spend their time. So if they download anything, including that Busy Lawyers Guide, they can get that on my website and they'll be on my email list.
Now, I will say about your podcast, they are amazing podcasts. Yeah, obviously, when we do these interviews, I'm doing research. I'm learning all about this other person. And so I listen to your stuff and man, you have a nice voice. It is easy to listen to. And I like how long your podcasts are. They really seem to fit. They're not too intimidating. Of course, I've already said your titles just totally hooked me into it. I have to know what you're talking about based upon your amazing titles. But maybe the most amazing podcast I have ever heard is your podcast where you did it recently, I think, but I jumped around, so maybe it wasn't recently. You actually were walking and you did a podcast? How in the world did you accomplish that?
You know, it was funny because I just decided, you know what, I'm just gonna do this because it's nice and relaxing when I go for a walk, and I'm gonna like kind of mix it up this week. So that's why I did that.
So right there, I would definitely want to hire you as my lawyer, even though you, I guess not since you're a prosecutor, but
you don't want me on the other end of the table.
No, I don't want to be on your radar screen, but I am so notes driven. I have notes all over right now. I have, you know, two computer monitors up. I'm looking at all my different notes and you're just walking along talking. It just comes right off the top of your head. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I do appreciate it. Best of luck. And I'll be following your journeys and your walks as you do your podcasting. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a complete and utter mess. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. Brooke Boland for her great job in spreading the good word about us. And Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.